Hello and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm AD Packham, and we want to dance with Boscagli, in association with Flowers Unlimited. Well then, we went to Gatecrasher housewarming party, but we ended up being polite house guests as we left Everton's brand spanking new stadium with nothing last Sunday. The reality is we should probably have come away with something, but our tame finishing let us down. That leaves us with 1 point from our opening two games, and it doesn't get any easier with Manchester City, our visitors on Sunday. Best to get some shooting practice in then, and that's exactly what we did on Wednesday night as we scraped through to the next round of the League Cup by putting six past Oxford United. We travel to Barnsley in the next round in September. Also this week, the transfer window slams shut. It's looking unlikely that there will be any further additions, but with the squad looking quite bloated, all eyes will be on the exit door. Joining me today is, I'm delighted to say, Alan Wares. Hello, Alan.
Hello. What are we doing here? What's all this then?
It's been a while. It's some red hot soccer chat, apparently. And joining
us with
some red hot soccer chat, Alan Wares, is the star of the treason show, the lovey's lovey. It's the only Mr. Mark Brailsford. Hello, Mark. You're right.
Hello, lads. Nice to be on. Thank you for asking.
Well, it's nice to see your gorgeous smiling face, Mark, as ever.
Mark, thank you.
The only better smile I've seen this week is on the face of Tsimas.
I love him.
Well, it's a good job that you do love him, because we're going to be talking about him quite a lot later on.
Yeah.
But Mark, we've got to start with the event in Liverpool last Sunday, and that means you being star spotted in Liverpool, random people outside the cabin, apparently.
Yeah, slightly the worse for wear. It was an international Beatles weekend, and the Beatles tribute acts from all over the world descended upon Liverpool, which is one of the other reasons the hotel costs were so high. apart from that certain little football association match over at the Hilly Dick.
Is that the Benny Hill and David Dickinson Stadium?
Yeah.
Well, it's apparently that's what the Scousers are starting to call it. Hey, yeah, you're going down the Hilly Dick, or what? You know.
So, I didn't actually realise this until today, actually, but apparently it costs £750 million to build.
Right,
£750 million.
Okay, Mark. Right, seeing as the official total still seems to be 93 million versus 700 and whatever it is AD just said. Can you see the difference? Is it obvious to you?
Well, the size is bigger, yes, because you do look at the infrastructure. But of course, they were building it at a time of not just COVID, but of course, the time when the steel prices shot through the roof. So their costs soared, as these big projects often have happened. So I understand that was the big factor. But yeah, it's definitely a huge project and it looks great. It is a good stadium.
I was about to say, give us a lowdown on how you feel about it. You've been obviously to other new stadiums. You're the one that went. And I've heard sort of, you know, stories from X to Y. Give us your lowdown on what you felt about the place from what you remember.
I think it was fantastic. In the sense that if I was an Evertonian, I'd be delighted that we've got they had the new stadium. And, you know, not unlike our time when we went into our new stadium, our condition was slightly different because obviously we were playing with Dean. We'd been to Gillingham. The club had been rescued from oblivion. So it was perhaps a more emotional deal, mm-hmm. but they had a similar feeling in that stadium of the fans going, wow, look at this. It's amazing. Having said that, I got chatting to an Everton, not just a fan, a shareholder on the train back actually the next day. And he was a little bit nonplussed by it, it has to be said, because obviously they had a very big attachment to being in the Gladys Street end and a stadium around the back of the house. You know, it was they missed their old stadium, no doubt, because it was a proper old fashioned stadium, but they definitely needed to move. And there was a lot to do. I mean, they basically hollowed out, they had to empty a dock, which was full of water and build it.
There was a lot of dredging was involved.
Yeah, it was a big deal. And there were unexploded World War II bombs in underneath it. And there were all sorts of...
Oh, right.
Of
so that issues. Is actually reclaimed land. I didn't realise. I thought it was actually an old dock. It is actually reclaimed land.
Yeah, if you look at the old photos, you will see it was basically where the ships used to be, and it was full of water.
Right. Oh, so yeah. The thing that I've had obviously everyone's going to have their own opinion, and especially I think probably Way fans might have a slightly different opinion, because I've heard a certain level of bittersweetness, especially from Evertonians, about that. Like you say, once you leave an old and trusted and loved friend like, well, Goodison Park was to them, even though I think, well, you can certainly tell me, AD, about the press box where basically it served its purpose. So to be wrenched from an old friend into something that's where you've got to get it right. And what you don't want is a soulless bowl like Southampton and Middlesbrough. I guess, Mark, you know, you're speaking to at least one person, but certainly one thing that came across on the telly as I was watching the game was just how quiet it was. Do you think that's sort of new stadium awe, or was that, did you feel a sense of nonplussedness amongst the home fans?
There was that great noise at the beginning because obviously they were building up the atmosphere. Their sound system's deafening. It was a huge sound. so they're all excited. And then suddenly the game starts and then it went very quiet because Brighton were actually, we were on top for a bit. Yeah. And suddenly they didn't know what to do. So there was a lot of silence around the ground as well. I'm in the middle of the away fans, so of course I think we're loud, but you don't know that compared. Yeah. And even on television, it's where the mics are and the level set. But you know, but I have to say, yeah, I felt it was a little unatmospheric. Yeah. And it was almost like they didn't quite know what to do, what to sing, and who was going to lead it.
This is the thing. And I mean, I did a couple of Everton shows last week and I was talking to them about it. And it's like, you know, when you're going, we had this at the Amex, and we still have this at the Amex to a certain degree as well, because, you know, it's slightly different with Everton because, you know, they're at Goodison, they could have been sat next to the same person for 20, 30 years. They might not know his name, but they know all his kids' names and what they do.
Yes.
But it's like, you know, there's that thing you have at football. You just talk to everybody and you get to know everybody. And all of a sudden, that person's in a different part of the stadium and he's not there anymore. And you've got someone else there.
Yes.
And, it, you know, when you're trying to get an atmosphere going, you know, the noisy bunch could be dissipated around the stadium, which is basically exactly what happened at the Amex.
Well, surely when they designed it, and there's that big wall that they've got where they've got the sort of the rake at 35 degrees and they're not allowed to have any steeper anyway. Surely when they designed it, like when they did Spurs' ground, they say, okay, this is what we're going to do. That's going to be the cop. That's what we're going to have here. So if you want to sing, if you want to be boisterous, if you want to be this, and this, put your tickets there. Surely they must have done that.
I think they did do that. And there is that end, the way from the opposite end from where the Albion fans were, which was that.
Yeah.
You just get the feeling they were feeling their way into it.
Yeah.
What I will say is the infrastructure around it, which is basically not very much because it's still an old dockland, is going to be ripe for regeneration. And we found an amazing pre-match sort of warehouse, really, that had been turned into basically what the terrace you would hope would have been.
Like a fan zone.
It was a fan zone, but with a proper stage with a band, musicians on, which is brilliant. I'm biased because I'm playing a band, but it was. But you could actually get everyone in, and the bar was so quick; it was extraordinary, and it was brilliant. And the atmosphere was superb, and there's food everywhere. And at the moment, it's a bit rough and ready, but along that stretch, it's a gold mine. Apparently, the council, the councillors anyway, I read some report on this, said it's. If you open a bar or a business in this area, you're set for life because it's going to, in the next 2 years, it'll be unrecognizable around the stadium.
I was about to say, what you're making it sound like is that any time I've been to the Olympic Stadium to watch Albion play at West Ham, is I never get off at Stratford, I get off at Hackney Wick because, like you say, there's these old light industrial units that have been converted into bars. There's a couple of lovely Belgian bars on the way there. There'll be burgers and what have you. Mm. It sounds like by the sounds of things, there's only one. And you know, if anyone wants to cheaply build, you know, a small aircraft hangar and put a big bar in it, then yes, as you say, you're set for life. And it does sound really good. One thing I'm going to say actually is this is where we harking back 14 years ago. And I'm just wondering here, and again, I'll get your take on this, Mark, is when people first visited the Amex, because we had those ramp up games, we had the Sussex Cup final, we had a game against Spurs, and then it was obviously Donny. I think someone said to me, well, if you want to go and visit the Amex for the first time, I mean, you have to bear in mind, you've got to have that mindset of 14 years ago as to the fact that we were all sort of very excitable six-year-olds. Don't go and watch a football game first time, because one thing you're going to do is watch everything except the game. Do you get the feeling that the Everton fans who are doing that have just basically spent their time looking around?
I don't think so. I mean, my theory is, and I said this to anyone who listened at the time as well, was that if we get the first goal in that game, we win that game. And we very nearly did get the first goal in that game. And if it had gone in, it would have been another contender for goal of the season. In fact, it was almost identical to Carew's goal of the season effort last year, which was a long ball from Bart that Carew pulled out of the sky and lobbed two defenders and left them on their arse, and then and just fought and a volley that cannoned off the crossbar.
I think he was helped by James Tarkowski not being very good.
Well.
Because he
none
he
of their just, defenders were very good, but
well,
we just couldn't put them in. We just couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. I mean, Tarkowski, he kept on trying to give us a goal.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he was. I'd say he was our man of the match.
From a point of view of someone who writes, you know, football plays as well, I would also say it wasn't in the script that we were going to win that day.
No,
in the way you were looking at the way things unfold. I don't think we were ever really going to win that game because it wasn't in the script. It was their first game in their stadium. Yeah. And I thought, you know, this is what's going to happen.
I mean,
and
if you're talking, about scripts as well, Mark, then basically the guy that scored the last ever goal at Goodison scores the first ever goal at the Hill Dick.
Well, there you go. So, you know, things work out sometimes like that in a dramaturgical way.
It didn't say nowhere in the script did he say a Japanese superstar scores the first goal
and they lose. Plus the fact the guy, if I'm not mistaken, there was a goal scorer who was also booked in the last game at Falmer for doing the seagull gesture.
Was that him?
And
it
was indeed, yes.
So you just think, oh, a bit of karma coming back on us there, because the ref really was a silly booking, and the ref, I don't think he should have booked him. But then the referee, for me, was also subconsciously perhaps a little biased, but it was a classic Moyes team we played again. And we always do this against Moyes teams. He has that... They do that mucking about and Pickford wasting time and that little routine trying to get around the 8-second rule annoyed everybody. It was really annoying. They're just an annoying team.
There is a kind of an anti-football to them.
Yeah, exactly. So I wasn't particularly enjoying that aspect of the game.
I've just gone through the highlights again now,
it's like silly boy.
I'm just looking at the chances that we had in that game. You know, the one where Danny Welbeck, I think. The one where he puts it over the bar. A lot of people were saying the ball was behind him. I'm saying actually his run was too late.
Well, 6 and 2 threes, really. I mean,
he looked a bit rusty, didn't he? He did look rusty.
I'd be curious to that, actually, Mark. I mean, okay, you get one aspect of it when you're on the telly. I don't know if you felt it in the game, but it wasn't just, and I know we'll come to it presently, it wasn't just Welbeck's penalty miss. And by the way, I have no problem with him taking the penalty. They have their hierarchy. Otherwise, you end up with that bickering like there was those Chelsea players about 2 or 3 years ago, and we're far more professional than that. Having said that, I felt his approach play, his link-up play, it's like he might have had a jinky.
One of the things that was really awful about that, I don't know how much the highlights show it, but the lead up to that penalty, the gamesmanship, the Moyes ball rubbish that was going on to distract the ref was horrendous. And that is just cheating, frankly. I think that was disgusting the way they do that. And I hope that our team never does that. I don't think our teams do that. But it was outrageously cheating, and it's one of the things that I'm getting a bit jaded with watching football generally.
Yeah,
and I'm not the only one. I think exactly. I don't mind, you know, there's a little bit of time wasting is going to happen with a goalkeeper hanging onto the ball and all, but my god, some making it they must take drama lessons. I need to offer my services as a director to coach these players in their acting technique, because I can do it at times like better than some of them. It's so obvious what's going on. And
it's also indicative of how far Everton have fallen, isn't it?
Well, you know, they're fighting for survival. It was a big game, but you know, but it's a Moises, it's a Moyes-esque thing, isn't it?
Yeah. Sean Dyche did it before him, didn't they?
I think unfortunately, football is full of that, and I think if they're not careful, they're going to alienate people who are going to get a bit jaded and to the point where they'll stop going.
I mean, some of the players they've actually signed, to be fair, I mean, I think that Grealish could be a massive signing for them.
I think he's going to do really well there.
It's a World Cup year, Al. So if he does well, it means he gets back and he gets his mojo back and gets back into the England setup, then that's good for England. But
yes, I agree. And he will do that, I think.
And I mean, the fact that we gave him like the whole of the stadium to get a cross in and then didn't mark someone at the back stick. It was just that Decoy was just too weak to.
You've got to say the fullbacks were a bit questionable with some of their play.
But they've just signed Tyler Dibbling as well, who's a player who's got great potential. I liked his seagull impression. It was I didn't mind it. But the main thing here was just those chances. The one where O'Reilly pounces on Tarkowski's back pass and just couldn't finish. Obviously, poor finish.
Very poor finish. Actually, you got to say
O'Reilly, you mean?
Yeah,
O'Reilly.
I know he's got a lot of critics, but I have to say, you know, that was poor. That was very poor.
Another one like that later. Trust me.
Now, I know it's easy to be wise after the event because you had Matoma actually for once losing his rag at another one of the players. If he'd had a bit more about him, all he had to do was back heel it to Matoma and the fella was in. I mean, again, an absolute boo-boo from Tarkowski. And I love the way that they showed on the replay Tarkowski's face the moment he played it back and then realised that O'Reilly was there. To be fair, I liked the fact that O'Reilly could see it coming and he anticipated it. I really liked that. But that means nothing if he's not then going to stick it in the onion bag. Yeah.
But I really like Matt O'Reilly, and I think there's going to be a lot more to come from him this year. Obviously, there's still lots of tittle-tattle about him possibly not being here, but I think he will be.
Well, I think he did point out himself. He said, I said something and someone then took it at completely the wrong face value. And I'm, and let's say, as you and I know about this show, ADM, we have to filter out the wheat from the chaff when it comes to someone making a thing about so-and-so's injury. I mean, you know, so-and-so is given, you know, XYZ club is interested in a given player. That to some people is that player is off. Meanwhile, back in the real world, well, I would like to think that Graham Potter, Roberto Di Zerbi, Fabian Hertzler have made every single Albion player attractive to every single club because then, you know, they're doing the job. And in which case, yes, we just have to put up with the silly season because of where we are in the food chain.
Basically, what you're saying is that, if they're not interested, then we're doing something wrong.
Then they're not trying hard enough. Absolutely. Yeah.
Absolutely. But there's a lot of that. And it was just frustrating. I mean, the second goal from Everton, there's not much, an awful lot we could do about. I mean, obviously, there's a little bit of ball watching, I think. But it was a tremendous hit. And I don't think Bart could do anything. But again, it's just those chances. It was the same against Fulham. We just need to be better in front of the goal. And it is like We're throwing away points because of it. And unlike Al, I do have an it. Well, no, I don't have an issue with Welbeck taking penalties. He's our lead striker.
Yeah, but the game he was but, having.
I think the fact that O'Reilly had taken the last two.
I know what you're saying. You keep the
and scored the last two.
Keep the shirt. I get.
I think.
That.
Yeah, I was curious. I mean, it was O'Reilly that gave him the ball. So and that was.
But that's my point. They have their pecking order.
Yeah.
And like I said, do you remember that thing from the Chelsea players about 2 or 3 years ago? And it was so embarrassingly unprofessional. It was about four or five. Yeah.
Funny though.
it was hilarious because you think how very Chelsea. Yeah. If I saw Brighton players doing that, I would wince.
Yeah.
No, you have your. I think someone actually at the fans forum did ask Fabian Hertzler who takes the penalties. And he was very non-committal, but what he's actually saying is the players will sort it out themselves, and yes, they'll have a hierarchy.
Oh, I didn't mind him handing the ball to him, actually. I don't think anybody really minded that. The problem was the delay. The way he was forced to wait and wait and wait, man, that referee, oh, geez, it was awful. And he and Pickford doing his antics as he does, it was gamesmanship of the highest order, and it was cheating, blatant cheating. Yeah. And I think that was one of the reasons why Welbeck eventually misses that.
Yeah, it was an absolutely terrible penalty as well. But then he used to play for Man United. So, that, you know.
Can I just say that, now, Hank, we'll come to that in a bit. Can I just say, though, that I think that actually, yes, it's easy to be wise after the event. And yes, you could argue that O'Reilly should keep it. No, I think they should keep their pecking order. But I do recall a penalty 2 years ago, something like that. And I think McAllister was, sort of 3 years ago, McAllister was due to take it. And whoever it was that was the opposition, they decided they were going to basically Evertonize it. and grizzle to the referee, and the keeper was going to muck about. And what it was that McAllister just picked the ball up and walked off about 10, 15 yards out of the maelstrom. Out of the, sorry?
It was at Wolves.
I think it was a home game. The one I'm thinking of was a home game. Just walks out the way and said, well, you kids get on with it. And when it's time for me to take the penalty, I'm going to just put this down. And of course, he smashed it home. So,
João Pedro used to do that as well.
Yes, he did. It's just one of those things where you think, as much as you, Mark, were saying it was written in the stars that we weren't going to spoil Everton's party, given the game that Danny Welbeck was having, and I'm not going to criticise the guy because, as you say, AD, he has been such a great talisman for us. That particular game he was having, there was no way he was going to score. Yeah.
Well, but before we move on from this, there was another talking point from the game. And actually, this carried on a little bit in the Oxford game on Wednesday night as well. And that was the performance of Carlos Baleba. It just seemed to be a little bit erratic. I mean,
got to him, hasn't it? It must have done.
I can't think of anything else.
I mean, he's done this before where he's sometimes, you know, if his head's in the game, he can be the best player on the planet sometimes. But sometimes, he gets these rushes of blood to the head. You know, the amount of penalties he's given away.
I don't know. I can't think of that many. Credit
to Wayne Moyes. His midfielders, the midfielders really knew what to do. They knew to shut down Baleba, and they really made sure that he was pushed out of the game. And I think Baleba didn't actually know how to respond to the way they formed up against him.
Yeah.
And it looked to me like that there was an imbalance there as well. And partially, I think it must have got to him a little bit that there's an occasion and he's been transfer speculation.
Well, I'm not worried about the transfer stuff. I mean, I think that's all just like chip paper now, but it's like
he might be. I think Mark's point is actually fairly valid here, is that I think that the talk of Manchester United being interested in the fact they can't afford him is their problem. That's not the point. The talk of Manchester United being interested in Baleba then puts him on the radar. Now, I think he was on the radar in the first place, but with Manchester United being interested, it's a big noise. In which case, David Moyes does his homework, sticks a couple of players on him, and he's out of the game. And of course, he's also not hot-headed. I don't think that's fair. But as you say, AD, he doesn't know what to do about it. And this, as much as I criticise, as much as people criticise managers, once the players are out on the pitch, there's not a huge amount managers can do necessarily. Going forward, if that's going to be the case that other managers are going to put two players on him in order to stultify him, this is where Hertzler can earn a bit more of his money saying, okay, how do you deal with this? What the answer is, I don't know. But the point is that's what he's paid for. And that's where I'm hoping he can come up with a solution.
Mark, do you agree?
I do agree there, because Alan's got a point with that, because of the way you respond as a coach is to free up or change the formation to the point where you can actually use that cornering of a one other player with two other players and add a bit more in the midfield, or someone with a bit more pace who's going to actually exploit that little gap that's going to appear in the midfield perhaps as
Matt
well.
Smitha.
I think he's a good player.
I thought Hinshelwood actually was an improvement because they didn't stick to him.
He was. There's the case in point. I think he came on and played decently as well. And I wonder if, why aren't we playing Buonanotte? Is my big bugbear at the moment.
We're coming to that.
Buonanotte.
That's in part two, dear boy. which we'll be getting to very shortly. But first, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. This show is brought to you in association with the fabulous Flowers Unlimited. Now, Alan, have you bought any flowers recently?
Actually, I have.
Where did you get them from, but perchance?
I did actually happen to get them from Flowers Unlimited. It was my first wedding anniversary last month. At the same time, I bought my dear wife, Susan, a paper present, which is lovely because that is the tradition of your first wedding anniversary. And she bought me exactly the same thing. I don't know if that's...
Well, it's not worth the paper it's written on.
Well, yeah. I don't know if that's synchronicity or lack of imagination, but...
No, that's an album by the police.
It's usually because the first year of marriage, you're so skint, you can only afford paper.
Exactly.
That's the reason.
So we just threw paper darts at each other. No, go to Flowers Unlimited, 175 to 177 Portland Road, Hove. They are the official flower suppliers for Brighton and Hove Albion. Go and see Dave Costa. Go and see his team. They're absolutely wonderful. It's not just flowers. They do all kinds of presents for any given occasion. And if you're an Albion season ticket holder, you will automatically get 20% off. Best thing is to tell them that, otherwise you won't. So, yes, all chocolates and champagne and flowers and all other presents. Yeah, head to Portland Road. It's either that or go to flowersunlimitedbrighton.co.uk. And thank you very much indeed to Dave for agreeing to sponsor us for a second year.
Indeed. Thank you so much indeed. Okay. And also thank you to Oxford United for being so accommodating in the League Cup. Actually, these League Cup games, actually, I mean, particularly the away ones in the early rounds, at grounds that we used to go to when we were on our uppers.
Question: have we played at the Kassam before?
Yes, we have. Yeah, a few times actually. I mean, really? there was a game we won 4-1 in the League Cup, which was famous for the fact that Elvis Manu even scored.
Elvis was in the building.
And Sam Adukavi, I can't even say it.
Aren't we talking about Manu in a minute?
But it was and there was a game where Kazinga Luwalawa scored there as well.
I'll take you for it.
Which was
astonishingly, even though it's a fairly new ground, they've got permission to move to another one. I think quite close to back where the old manor ground was in Headington. But build three sides of it. Don't build the rest of it. Even though I think there's been plenty of money to be able to do so. No, sod that. Let's move somewhere else.
Yeah. Well, you're just playing number wang. But there's a joke
that actually I was told last night and still don't get. Don't tell it to me now.
But it was these games and those sort of grounds that we used to go to, though, they're always a lot of fun. And from I couldn't make it last night, but the crowd had such a great time. And it's these sort of games where all the new songs are born, and some will go into the repertoire, into the set list, and others will never be seen again, normally the ones that I write. But
did I hear that actually they were singing Diego? Now the point is, last night we had two Diegos on the pitch.
Yes, well there is Diego had just scored. Gomez and both Diegos were there, and I think that's what confused everybody. But it was, he does have his own song. But yeah, no, there's some very entertaining ones there. But I mean, as scratch teams go, Mark, this one was pretty damn good, to be honest, wasn't it?
I didn't know what it was. Which song are you talking about?
Oh, what, last night? Oh, there's
get him to sing. Mark, please don't get him to sing. Not now, please don't.
I'll get the guitar out.
I'll tell you after, but I'm sure you'll be hearing it at the Amex on Sunday. But,
what AD's point was saying is that obviously with the early rounds of the League Cup, and I'm not going to call it whatever it is,
Busy Drink Cup.
The Scarab Cup or whatever it's called. With the early rounds, as obviously one of the sort of like the top teams in the country now.
I love that song.
I want to feel the heat with
as long as we sing it with that. I think that's got to be like the
You know what you're closing with today now, Al.
No, no, I'm really not. No, I hate that song. But anyway,
he's a German. I love that song. That was funny. That was so bright.
Anyway, back to the
radio. Back to the radio. Well, I think, sorry, Mark, what AD was asking is that early rounds of the League Cup, we tend to put out, I won't say a scratch team, but is previously it's been under 21s, but these are all of this lot were first teamers. But even though there was hardly anyone that starts the league games, we still look pretty decent.
Well, yeah, but it made the Hertzler's job probably quite complicated in a good way for Sunday. He's got something to think about. But how do you really gauge a team against Oxford? Bless them. But,
exactly.
I think you can really read too much. Like you said, it's the early rounds. You don't read too much into it. I mean, it's not as if you're playing, a Grimsby. giant team like Grimsby.
One thing, I can't remember the name of the cup, but there is the cup that the Albion under-21s playing, and they obviously play against teams, I think, in the Leagues 1 and 2. And they do pretty well. I think it would have probably been a bit too much of a big ask to stick out an under 21 side. And in fact, it would have been quite frankly insulting to Oxford United. But there's that kind of interim of basically the Albion's second 11, with you could argue the third 11 being sort of like the strongest under 21 side they can put out. So knowing full well that the under 21s would have done pretty well, not necessarily won, it's good to know that the second 11 has itself improved. Like I say, we've for the last eight, nine years in the Premier League, we've had a decent first 11. It's having the squad to back it up that I think is so important. And I think that's that backup that we saw. Yes, it was against Oxford, but I think it's that important that we had that backup.
Well, I'm looking at that team last night, and majority of them have been bought to be first team starters. Yeah, and as Mark said, this is giving an awful lot of headaches to Fabian, not necessarily for this week. But when you look at the likes of Boscagli in there, you're looking at Kadioglu, you're looking at, obviously Hinchelwood is starting games. You've got
Milner.
Milner. After last night's performance, there were a lot of calls for Jason Steele to be starting games as well.
Yeah.
Good call, though.
Well, hang on. This is another point. I'm just going to raise this as another little mini rant. Is that when De Zerbi used to flip-flop between the two, and he used to drive everyone around the twist, you think, is it a case you genuinely can't make your mind up, or are you trying to be as fair as possible? And, of course, then everyone had their favourites. Jason Steele can do this. Bart Verbruggen can do that. And, of course, then Verbruggen won the shirt, which obviously then puts him more in the firing line, and so any dropsy, any mistake he makes, people start grumbling, put Steele back in goal. And let's face it, Jason Steele's stock has only really risen because people are grumbling about Verbruggen because they don't think he's good enough. And yet when he started, and there's nothing I've seen necessarily to make me think that Steele or Verbruggen are either massively better than one or other, one might say, oh, one makes saves, one does this, one's better on cross. It's always 6 and 2 threes. I think they've both got perfectly decent, kicking delivery. But yes, Jason Steele showed what he's about. And the fact is, he's also prepared to wait for his chances to play in these games rather than whinging like a bitch on heat for him to play. He's accepted that Verbruggen is the first choice keeper and yet wants to stick around to do that. So I'm really pleased that we've got that in that thing, but I don't think that's necessarily means that Steele is better than Verbruggen. Yeah. It just means that, yes, he had a really good game.
Well, it's a classic early season, isn't it? I mean, we were only three games into the season. There were some players who are still getting into it, and players are still, shuffling around in where they're going to be in the season, in the squad. Players might still go before the transfer window because the squad's too big, as we know. So you will see in every club, they're all saying the same thing. Look at that Leeds first performance and the Everton first performance against them. That was terrible. And then look what happens. And it's still early season for so many teams at the moment. I'm not sure we're going to see the best of us for a day. Well, I'm not sure.
That's very true. But
it is early season.
Yeah, but the points you win in August are just as valuable as the points you win in May.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it sets the tone, doesn't it? And I think the tone at the moment has been somewhat underwhelming.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, and oddly enough, though, I mean, certainly with the first two games, correct me if you're wrong, if I'm wrong, but certainly in the league games, we've actually only had one of the new signings is starting.
That's the where we've got the frustration, I think, is because, well, these great players, and he's you know, Sumas, who talked about. But of course, you know, we've got to trust the coaches. They know what they're doing. You assume and you go, well, you know, we'll see him. I'm sure he'll probably be on the bench on Sunday.
Well, with the Greek lads as well, Mark, you've got to trust the medical staff as well. Bearing in mind, they hadn't actually, neither of them have played any sort of football at all since the middle of last season.
Yeah, but as a lot of people were saying around me, you know, well, at least put him on the bench. If he's surely good enough for 10 minutes.
I think Simas was on the bench last time.
No, he wasn't.
He hasn't been on the bench.
It was his first
exposure to the first team and playing. He was Oxford. Yeah,
so well, I mean, like we say, it will come. I mean, because like I said, they've brought them in now. I think the slight difference here is that a lot of players we buy in, loan them out straight away, because they're always quote one for the future. I think that they're kind of giving a bit more of a hurry up to them now, because I don't know if there's a change in mindset that says, OK, well, it's great that we can buy a season ahead, but can we buy for now as well while we're at it?
Don't you get the feeling that there might be something in the wind in the transfer window? It's still
what
a few
do you mean?
Days. I mean, yeah, there's a few strikers floating around. I don't know. You know, what's the shout on Jackson?
You're of the opinion that we might land a surprise.
I'm wondering
in the next
that.
3 days.
Yeah, it smells like that to me. I don't know if I'm guessing too far.
I think the end of the window is going to be. We're going to talk about that in a minute. But it's like, I think it's going to be busier than we anticipated. Yeah. But I think it's going to be more people going than coming. But okay, yes. But I mean, they're talking about buying players for one season in advance. One I do want to talk about is Brian Gruder, who blew incredibly hot and occasionally quite cold last night, on Wednesday night.
You were ranting on WhatsApp, weren't you?
Well, the miss was dreadful. I think he was trying too hard at times. I think he was trying to do too much, and sometimes just do the simple thing. If he did the simple thing, he'd have had more than one goal last night.
He had a good end of season. It's almost like the season ended too soon for him to really press on, didn't it? And he had a good, you know, in the summer he played for the German under 21 European team, and he played very well. I mean, made the final. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I'm being critical of him, but I mean, I think he was probably man of the match last night. I thought he was
very, very creative. He was very positive. And I think that the one thing that you will criticise him about with that finish is that, you know, there was an opportunity to stick it with his right peg. And one thing I have noticed, and as you know, AD, this is one of my bête noires, is players not being two-footed enough. And I don't mean Mason Holgate style on Mitoma. What I mean is being able to kick the ball with right and left. Even the simplest things like Joel Veltman's pass onto Gruder for his goal with his left peg. And I don't think I've ever seen Veltman pass the ball. The only thing he does with his left peg is stand on it. And yet it was this delightful ball over the top for Gruder to run onto. Yes, he had the opportunity to stick away with his right leg. And I think that that's one of those things the manager said, why on earth didn't you just tuck it away with your wrong foot?
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, but
that's the only criticism you have, isn't it? Yes, he's
well, no, he was just doing too something. There was times where he was just guilty. He was just guilty of overplaying at times, and he's such an exciting talent, and we're playing in the game where we won 6-0 against Oxford United, so you got to try things. But
yes,
if he gets exactly the same chance, say for instance he's on the pitch against Manchester City on Sunday, and he gets exactly the same chance and does the same thing, that is a problem.
Because like I say, we've been very wasteful in front of goal. But the other thing
wasteful.
Is
we haven't scored an open play so far. Well, it's only two games, but we haven't scored an open play yet.
Yeah, okay, but we can't even score all our penalties. But you know, that's just a statistical anomaly at the moment.
Well, you play
really.
A striker then, don't you? Or you either get one in or you get the Greek lad in, because that is the criticism I think that came out of Everton away. It was. Yeah. We haven't got one, have we? The
we
spare
could have done
striker
with Ruta on the pitch. I mean, we could have done.
But Ruta's not even a striker.
But when he played up front against Fulham in that number 9 position, it really didn't suit him. No. It was the wrong position.
Yeah, but can I also point out that Jack Hinshelwood played up front against Spurs?
Play him up front again.
They were all hungover.
He still managed to score a couple of goals, and including a no-look one where he's looking at the other end of the ground.
Yeah, but the team were on form that day. I mean,
yes,
that
I
game.
Know. And they were on the beach, yeah. No,
but there is that element, though, in the transfer window in the Premier League. Surely they thought, we've got to get someone in here to back us up. I really do.
The thing is, has anyone heard any whispers about anything? Because let's face it, these days, you cannot go a minute without there being a rumour.
In Fabian's press conference, he alluded to something, but I can't tell you what that is because I don't know.
Because you don't speak German.
I think something might be going on, but I don't think it's...
Well, that's helpful, Aidy. Well done.
Yeah,
thanks,
I know.
Call
me Mystic Aidy.
But yeah, it does feel like this transfer window is still open. I think we can be patient. It's still early season. Yeah. Let's see what happens, because something will happen.
Before we move on to the next topic in that case, let's just have a quick one round the thing. In your opinion, I think most of the managers feel this way, but how do you feel about it? Should the transfer window close before the season starts, or is the 31st of August okay?
Well, you answered your own question with that one, because that's a rhetorical question I've ever heard. Of course it should be shut before everything else starts, because it's ridiculous you're playing games when you don't know your squad.
They tried to do that, though, but the rest of Europe stayed open.
Yeah, and that's the problem with football, isn't it? And that's top-down, stroke Premier League, stroke UEFA, that is one of the parts of how corrupt it is sometimes. Yeah. It's just thinking, well, that's about making money. That's not fair, and it's not right. If I was a player's union representative, just wearing my somewhat political hat for a minute, you'd be looking at this going, well, actually, is that really fair on the players? The players are being played to death at the moment. They're getting overextended on tours and all the injuries that we're seeing. And again, you know, we're getting injuries in training, aren't we? We're going to see this a lot this season. The tired players, the injuries will mount up. The players, surely... union will be going, well, hang on, you settle this before the season starts. Don't have all this pulling of players around and the mental torture of what they're going through with their families, whether they move house or whether the kids start school. Anyway, all of these things are very unfair on the players, I think, and that's basically football's greed here, that's a pretty poor indictment of European football.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, stop talking sense, Mark. I mean, that's what you just said there. That's the unspoken thing in football. People don't talk about, like, the players and them having young children and families and having to move to a different environment, different country, different language, and all that. People don't talk about that. They just see a price tag and expect it to be an instant hit, but it's not. You know, it does take time, and you know, one transfer that happened, obviously, was the João Pedro one, which I'm still scratching my head over a little bit, and in regards to the actual figure. But you know, he was sitting on the beach, and next thing you know, he scored a goal in the final of the Club World Cup final, which nobody wanted.
So they could wear a badge on Match of the Day on their shirt with Club World Champions in a friendly match.
Well, the other thing I'm thinking here is that a player could end up having a full pre-season with a given club, and then someone comes in with a silly offer, and that player then has to go to ends up going to that new club where they haven't had a full pre-season with them, and has to learn or unlearn a whole load of other stuff that, you know, where that club did it one way, his new club does it another way. And thinking, well, that was a waste of a summer.
Yeah. Okay. You know, well, I do want to talk about the actual transfer window regarding us as well, but we'll do that in a minute. I just wanted go back to the Oxford game. I just want to rattle through these goals and some of the other performances in this game, because I think there were some really massive standout performances for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've just spoken about Gruder. I mean, James Milner was great as well. Diego Coppola, what did you make of him, Mark?
Is it Coppola or Coppola?
I'm not sure.
I'm not going down that road anymore. we're trying to work out Boscagli or Boscagli. I think we've worked out it, oddly enough, in French it is Boscagli.
Yeah. Coppola. Well, he's exciting, Coppola. I like him. I'm wondering if you know, we'll see him sooner rather than later. I hope so. What doesn't worry me is the centre backs. What worries me is the full backs. I've got a thing about how the fullbacks haven't quite performed. But, yeah, you're right, though. The Oxford game was great for seeing. I mean, Watson scored, didn't he? That was fantastic news. Simas,
best goal of the night.
Mentioned. And Tasker came on. And did he come on? He scored, didn't he? And, you know, that's exciting.
Well, yeah. There was a first start as well for Harry Howe.
Harry Howe, he's a prospect.
Who I thought was absolutely sensational.
I love the fact that the club are not sending him out on loan.
Yeah, they see something there, don't they? That's lovely, that. When you see a player coming through, we love that. Yeah.
Well, I'm just wondering if it also helps Jack Hinshelwood, and actually they can help each other. I'm just curious about, I don't know if it, you know, it matters in that way, but yeah.
But the whole club benefits from that, from the top, bottom up, because then the youth players go, wait, look, our lads are playing. We've got a chance here. Yes. This is fantastic for the future. And the spirit of the club from the bottom up lifts everyone else
up. Absolutely. Yeah.
But it's an interesting thing as well, because, I mean, it's particularly this week where we've seen a 15-year-old make his debut for Arsenal and a 16-year-old score for Liverpool. And with that, you've got various other issues which you don't really consider, because there's this, like, because they're still children, and there's safeguarding issues, you know, things like they're not allowed to get changed in the dressing rooms. They have to have their own dressing room. They've got to have chaperones. They've got to have all of this sort of stuff. It's the stuff you don't think about.
Do you remember? And I'm going to rewind about 20 odd years here. The Albion. The Albion did a Christmas card of all the Albion of all the players, kind of stripped to the waist with all in Santa stuff, and kind of, I don't mind, it's fine, but slightly homoerotic. And the one person who was not allowed to be in that photo shoot was Jake Robinson, because he was too young. He was 17. I remember this.
Well, it's not like in my day in show business in the 80s, I'll tell you. Being groped in the wings. All sorts went on.
What are you doing that orange?
Yeah, the kids are coming through. It's the League Cup games. We've had it with more under-21s playing in the League Cup games than previously before. But this is the point I'm making, because our second 11 is so much stronger. I'll say, even then, I keep saying under-21s, Hinshelwood's only 20, Howell's 17, Simas is 19.
Well, this is what they say. They call it rotating the squad, which is what happens when you put out a weak team like Grimsby did, and you have to play that, you know, those poor teams like Man United. You know?
Yeah.
But another player who I thought did actually have a good game last night, and this will be right up your strata, Mark, which is with your fullback issue, Joel Veltman.
What a player. Why isn't he starting?
He loves the game against Man City. Would you? I mean, Vifa's been starting at right back the first two games of this season, and towards the back end of last season. I mean, I've said on the show several times that my appreciation of Max Vifa is, but I want to see him in his actual position.
I agree with that. I think he's a good player.
With that in mind, would you start Veltman against Manchester
City?
Absolutely.
You could argue Veltman is canny, so it's brilliant pro. He would have handled that Grealish situation very, very well, and he would have got no change out of Veltman. You could argue perhaps he's not as quick as Weaver, and I guess that is why Weaver starts ahead of him. But Veltman's a great player. I love Veltman. I mean, who doesn't in the fan base? But he is a canny pro, and I think that we're missing that nouse in those positions.
But you also mentioned pace there as well, Mark, which is something else that we've been lacking in defence.
And against Manchester City, you know, that's going to be important. So I don't think we'll see him start on.
Sorry, Alan, you wanted to say
something?
Can I just
admire your euphemism here, though, Mark, using the word canny, when basically we mean master of the outhousery?
I would not call it that housery. Well, actually, yeah, you're right. But, but the thing is, you know, This is a professional game we're talking about.
Yes. And like I say, a matchup of him against Grealish would have been hilarious.
It would have been great, wouldn't it? It really would.
They'd have just spent each time tickling each other.
This is one of the good things about Hertz that I like a lot, is that he doesn't have this moisery, outhousery, as you're putting it, about him so far that I've noticed. It's very subtle. I like that about our team, that we try and play the right way most of the time. Yeah. I mean, I think Velma's got that little in him. But mostly we play a more fair sort of code of play than most teams, and I'm proud of that.
I also like the fact that, because Howell played, if not all, then nearly all the game, but also because he had Veltman behind him, you'd like to think that there was that. I mean, that link up between fullback and winger, where we've had it previous with Estupiñán and Mitoma, and at times when they were at their best, they were unplayable. But you'd like to think that Veltman was kind of helping Howell on the pitch. Yeah. Howell had a good game, and there was, you know, could have scored. Well, he had two assists, could have scored another one himself. You could still see he was a boy in a man's game, but it's not as though he was completely outdone. Yeah. And you'd like to think that if not Milner, then Veltman could actually just sort of put a hand on the shoulder and say, "Keep going, it's like you're doing well, blah blah," and talking and chit chatting all the time.
And just before we move on, Mark, just a quick word about Stefano Simas.
Yeah,
get out of a minute. It's like it was a great debut for him. First minutes, two goals, two great finishes.
He's looking like he's champing at the bit, isn't he? He really wants to play. And you've got to love a striker who wants that, because that's what you need.
With a smile on his face.
And he looks great. I'm very excited. Apparently, Greece has gone berserk over Brighton and Albion at the moment because we've got Simas. And apparently the social media is alive with the sound of plate smashing about him. Oh. It's amazing. And I think he's got to be on the bench on Sunday. Please put him in. You know, it's got to be.
But I mean, Hertzler did specifically say after the game, you know, I think he kind of was already implied he's not ready yet.
He didn't look unready to me.
Yeah, but like I say, there is a bit. Yes, there's an almighty chasm between Oxford and Man City. With all due respect to Oxford,
you can
United.
Give him 10 minutes off the bench.
I think if we're 6-0 up against Manchester City, then yes, by all means. But yeah. I mean, I do get the point. But obviously, and this is the thing, that what we see on the pitch is obviously a massively different thing to what you see in the training ground. And Hertzler knows his team. He knows his players. Simas looked very exciting, but as you say, he was already standing on the shoulders of giants. We were 3-0 up with 25 minutes to go. Fill your boots on, go and have some fun. That's mightily different to playing Manchester City. The pace at which they're going to play.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's move it on to the next week then. And we've briefly touched on the transfer window, but I mean, there's going to be a few players that will be going permanently. There'll be a few players that will be going on loan. Mark, you mentioned Facundo Buonanotte earlier. I mean, he's a player I'd really like to stick around. But for whatever reason, Fabian doesn't like him.
It's peculiar, isn't it?
I think that's harsh. Sorry, I know he's asked you. The reason I say that's harsh is that the club is not prepared to sell him. They only want to put him out on loan, which says to me that they think he's going to take another year to get to where they want him to. So when you say he doesn't like him, I think he's not ready yet.
I saw enough of him when he was playing under De Zerbi, and I saw enough of him when he was given opportunities for Leicester last year, that he is good enough. And the fact he's playing for the world champions at full international level tells me that he's good enough. So there is something there that it maybe just does not fit into whatever Hertzler wants.
I've got to be honest with you. When I've seen him play for us, now it has been a while, I still have major reservations.
Well, no, because when he played, we were playing him quite often on the wing, which isn't his position.
Yeah. And now we've got those players in central midfield. So he's going to be back in the pecking order again.
Yeah.
Well, I'd rather have Rutter playing than Buonanotte, frankly.
Okay. Well,
play both.
But another one who's never really been given a massive opportunity is Jeremy Sarmiento. I suspect he'll be probably. I don't think he'll be. This will be another loan if he does go. Yeah. He's had three loans in the last 3 years, and it's just like
he must be fed up of that by now.
Yeah,
yeah. But something you can't muck about like that, and he's not one of the 19-year-olds anymore.
Yeah. But another player, we actually started the game last night. Apparently, there's interest from the. I saw this described as the new Italian superpower yesterday, which is Como.
Yes, well, yeah. Fabregas is their manager, isn't he? Yeah,
Perry Como there. Yeah. Cesar Fabregas is very interested in taking him to Como. Yeah. So that's one that could happen. I don't know with the other two, with Boscagli and Coppola, where he's going to fit in. But I mean, again, fullbacks is something that we are short of. And I mean, he had an interesting game last night. I think there was a couple of issues with, I mean, that chance he gave to Oxford in the first 30 seconds.
Who are you talking about? Sorry,
Igor.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about Semi Sarmiento.
Oh, I didn't realize you meant that, Igor. Yeah, Igor. Well, yeah, you can imagine he'll go, but really.
But, and also,
So can I also just point out, actually, in the first two games I've seen him play, I don't have too many problems with De Kuyper. I thought he played okay.
Oh, it's still early for him, to be fair. Yeah.
No, I mean, he looks exciting going forward. He started okay.
Yeah. And well, it's that understanding with Matoma needs to develop that apparently was a good thing about him. But
he was desperately trying to work on that.
Yeah. But defensively, he was at full, you know, for that goal. But, you know, he's just settling into the team. I think he's a good player. I like the look of him.
There's something about him.
Give him
yeah.
time.
And the other interesting one is that Julian Ciso is still a Brighton player. The deal with Bluco fell through.
That was weird, wasn't it? Wasn't that weird?
I suspect we will never see him in Brighton ever again. Unless he's playing for someone else.
Yeah, he'll sign somewhere. But obviously the injury was bad enough that they failed the medical. But the same of it was, what a talent. You know, those goals he scored. I loved those goals, especially that away game at Chelsea.
Yeah, and that's the point about that is that he could either be brilliant. I think he either wants to sort of score screamers or not bother at all. I mean, even in that particular game,
Zerbi
criticised him because it was about 25 minutes ago. He said, yeah, he scored his goal and then stopped playing.
Yeah, they exasperate, don't they, these talents? Yeah. You watch, though, in a few years' time, he's going to be one of the top players. He's going to be huge.
I'm sure
and we're going
will.
To be going, damn, he used to play for us.
And another one that's been rumoured to be leaving is Tarek Lamptey.
Yeah, kind of see that, really.
I still think he's got something. That's weird. I still think he's got something to offer. I'm like, say, I take your point, Adi. I think Weaver at right back is a waste of his talent. Which, if you're going to say that Weaver is not going to be playing at right back, then yes, we are mercilessly short of right backs.
Yeah.
Depends who wants him, I guess, as well. Sima, what's happened to him? He's still not started a game for us. Or
that's the one I find a mystery. I don't understand. He was banging goals for fun, wasn't he, up there?
When they were on the Albion Unlocked thing the other day, he did upset David Weir by saying that his favourite ground he played at wasn't Ibrox. So, therefore, he's surplus to requirements. But, I mean, yeah, Sima is one that he could stick around. He is a striker, so... Yeah, maybe stick him on the bench. You know, Champions League experience last year. But we'll find out. And all of this when we come back to you next week, because that's all we've got time for. So thank you to Mark Browsworth. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been Adi Packham. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be with you again next week. Thanks. Bye. Una mattina. Mi sono alzato, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, 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 una mattina mi sono alzato e ho trovato l'invasor. Oh partigiano, portami via, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, 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 partigiano, portami via, che mi sento di morire. E se io muoio da partigiano, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, 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 e se io muoio da partigiano, tu mi devi seppellire, e seppellire lassù in montagna. Oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, 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 e seppellire lassù in montagna, sotto l'ombra.
tutte le genti che passeranno ti diranno che bel fior. E questo è il fiore del partigiano. Oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. E questo è il fiore del partigiano morto per la libertà. E questo è il fiore del partigiano morto per la libertà. Stamattina mi sono alzato. Oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Stamattina mi sono alzato e ho trovato l'invaso. Oh partigiano, portami via. Oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Partigiano, portami via, che mi sento di morire. E se io muoio da partigiano, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. E se muoio da partigiano, tu mi devi seppellire. E seppellire lassù in montagna, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Seppellire lassù in montagna, sotto l'ombra di un bel fior. Tutte le genti che passeranno, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. E le genti che passeranno ti diranno che bel fior. E questo è il fiore del partigiano. Oh bella ciao, bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Questo è il fiore del partigiano morto per la libertà. Questo è il fiore del partigiano morto per la libertà. Questo è il fiore del partigiano morto per la libertà.
Alla mattina appena alzata, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Alla mattina appena alzata, laggiù in risaia devo andare. E fra gli insetti e le zanzare, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. E fra gli insetti e le zanzare, un dur lavoro ci tocca far. Oh mamma mia, oh che tormento, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Mamma mia, col suo bastone, oh bella ciao, bella ciao, ciao, ciao. Il capo squadra col suo bastone e noi curve a lavorare. Ma verrà un giorno che assai provate, oh bella ciao, bella ciao.